Struggling to stay up to date with social media? Do you want to get ahead online? You're in the right place. Welcome to the Public Sector Marketing Show, the podcast for public sector professionals who want to elevate their digital communications. Here's your host, Joanne Sweeney.
Hello and welcome to Season 6 and Episode 98 of the Public Sector Marketing Show. I love the internet and how it has democratized the voice of citizens, the world of work and media. However, it has some dark sides, and the latest negative trend is deepfake. The combination of the internet, social media, generative artificial intelligence gives those with malicious intent huge opportunities. And manipulated media is now mainstream, and we all need to watch out for it. I already mentioned in an earlier episode that it's an election year right across the world, and I predict that deep fake is going to have fun and really going to disrupt elections across the globe. So let's dive into the world of deep fake and discuss how you can spot deep fake and how we as citizens can be protected. So what is deepfake and why should you care? Well, first of all, let me explain what deepfake actually means. So it is a video of a person in which their face or body has been digitally altered so that they appear to be someone else, typically used maliciously or spread false information. And we've seen that deepfake has been used recently against singer and pop icon Taylor Swift. But what are the different types of deep fakes and how can you spot them? Business Today wrote an excellent article, and I am taking excerpts from that article, which I've linked in the blog post associated with the podcast. So first, face swapping deep fakes. This is the most common form where the face of one person is superimposed onto another's using deep learning algorithms. It can be done very convincingly, making it appear as if the target person is saying or doing things that they haven't. And you can see how this could be used to great effect against politicians and election candidates. The second type of deep fake is called voice synthesis. So this is generating synthetic voice recordings that mimics somebody's speech patterns and intonations. These can be used to create fake audio messages or mimic someone's voice to an eerily accurate degree. So essentially, we can get people to say anything that we want them to say. Really scary. Gesture and body movement is also possible. The manipulation of how people are moving and standing, using deep learning techniques, you can alter the body movements, gestures, and expressions of somebody in a video to make it seem like a person is doing or saying something that they didn't. Moving on, text-based deep fakes. So AI-generated texts such as articles, social media posts, or even emails that imitate the writing style of a specific individual, organization, or business, potentially leading to misleading content creation. Okay, number five, object manipulation. This is where beyond faces and bodies, deep learning can manipulate objects within videos, changing their appearance or their behavior. This could lead to deceptive presentations of events or situations. The next one is hybrid deep fakes. So this combines multiple techniques such as face swapping with altered voice or body movements to create more sophisticated and convincing deep fakes. And how is deep fake being used? Well, it's been used in many ways, obviously maliciously, where people have nefarious intent. We've got revenge porn, political manipulation, spreading hoaxes, financial fraud, and then damaging of reputations of individuals and of organizations. So this is really scary times, but half the battle is always having an awareness and an understanding. So that, my friends, is deepfake.
Public sector pros, do you want to progress in your career? Are you going for promotion? Do you want to stay ahead of the digital media landscape? We can help you. View our training calendar at publicsectormarketingpros.com.
So how can society and citizens be protected against deepfake? What can we do? Social media platforms, I believe, in the first instance, have a huge responsibility because it is on their platforms that deepfake content is being shared at scale, and it has all the ingredients of virality right there. They should have AI detection technology in place, and some of the big tech companies like Microsoft, Google, and Meta have definitely taken the first steps to introduce it, but certainly there's a lot more that they can do, because let's think about it. We know that how they make money is through ad revenue, and ad revenue is based on our attention and our views. And we know that deepfake videos amass massive views. One recently on TikTok was a deepfake video of the Eiffel Tower on fire. It got tens of millions of views and millions of likes. And the hashtag Pray for Paris was trending. So huge responsibility on the social networks. Governments and legislators certainly have a role. We know that in Ireland, our new AI advisory council has been set up. And of course, deepfake will come under that remit. So that brings together a group of people from industry, from academia, subject matter experts, whose role it is to provide independent and expert advice. At a more global scale, politically and around the legislative point that I'm making, the European Union has an updated code of practice to stop the spread of disinformation through deepfakes. The US has introduced the Deepfake Task Force Act to assist the Department of Homeland Security to counteract deepfake technology. On terms of the EU code of practice, it is the world's first international legal framework to have big tech companies to commit to counter disinformation and deepfakes across their platforms. In the US states of California and Texas, they've even passed laws to criminalize the publishing and the distribution of deepfake videos that may influence an election outcome. So that's very interesting. California and Texas criminalizing it in relation to election outcomes. In January 2022, China's internet watchdog, the Cyberspace Administration of China, publish new guidance for content providers who modify face and voice data in an effort to counteract the spread of deepfakes. So while social networks can have a responsibility, industry in terms of building out new technology to counter it and identifying it, and then legislators, what about us? What about broader society and public sector? Well, you need to be prepared for an attack, just like you would be prepared for a cyber attack. So some practical things you can do: set up expansive digital monitoring of your organization's names, key individuals, and also relevant keywords, so that you will quickly spot any deepfake content that is spreading, because it spreads fast. Have a fact-checking strategy to counteract any deepfake that do get out there. Have an agile team equipped to counteract any misinformation through deepfake. And then finally, what I would say is then launch a large-scale public awareness campaign to support your organization after that initial crisis communications.
Marisa Ryan, it's been a couple of years since you've been in the podcast. And actually, before this podcast was born, I started doing a COVID-19 conversation series. So I think it's about 4 years since we last spoke like this.
Yes, I remember I was probably one of the first ones to do the COVID mm-hmm. one. I remember bringing myself out, thinking of the quietest possible time to do the recording was a Friday morning. I remember doing a sitting down with you, and we were very, very early stages of the pandemic at that stage. I don't think I'd stopped working at that stage, but that had been very early on. I hadn't had a day off, and thankfully things have calmed quite significantly since. But on other good news as well, we've got a bigger team and we're still very proud of what we've done. I remember having a chat about that at the time. But we've moved on from COVID a little bit.
And let me remind people, Marisa Ryan, you are Social Media and Digital Marketing Manager at Ireland's Health Service Executive. It is a whopper of a role and a responsibility. You've survived a pandemic and that lived experience is really going to stick with you. But now we're in a different era. I'm sure, listen, there's always something, isn't there? And we're here to talk about AI and deep fake. So is that posing a problem? Is it on the horizon of potentially causing a problem? What kind of conversations are you having at the moment within your team?
Well, it's definitely on our radar, most definitely. And you mentioned AI, like we try not to be afraid of AI. We want to take that as a positive. Like you can imagine the advances it would bring to healthcare. So I suppose we have to take that one as something that we could really benefit from. But deepfake is a whole different ballgame. Now, we would have seen a certain amount of it during the pandemic. Like remember, like very, if we're talking about the pandemic alone, like remember the army are coming in type of things that used to be happening or stories that used to happen and spread quite quickly during the pandemic. And then same for vaccine misinformation and disinformation around that. So we would have we are aware that it's there, and there's a lot of stuff happening, and we're still trying to remove content from certain that are could prove harmful to people in relation to health. I suppose when COVID and vaccine were so prominent, we were seeing more of it. But obviously around Ireland now, there's other like migration and other stories that people are unfortunately spreading misinformation about. But that's so it's kind of moved away slightly from the health, but it doesn't mean it's not there. It certainly is.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? I was just looking at a couple of recent examples, one being like in January of this year that the Eiffel Tower was on fire. I think it got like 87 million views and the hashtag Pray for Paris was trending. And oftentimes, you know, people are doing this just for the likes and the shares and the notoriety of going viral. But on the inside, what's the damage and the impact of you and your team spending time correcting the record and trying to convince people that misinformation is in fact not true?
Yeah, we do spend a lot of time, but I suppose we've never really gone out, and we would have seen this from as far back as the HPV vaccine campaign. So we've tried a number of different things around that time where there was people coming onto our trolling our accounts with misinformation at the time. And we really felt that we tried to respond to every single query giving the facts, but we felt that that wasn't the way to do it. What we were trying to do was get out in front of that with actual facts in relation to the vaccine. We did the same thing for COVID vaccine. COVID, and that like we are the health experts, and we were widely known during the pandemic that we were the go-to source of information for content and social media. So we're trying to use that as the advantage. And Joanne, you often share this, the Mike Ryan clip that said about us that we don't go after the bad, we replace it with good information, and we would stick to that very much so in the HSC as well. And we do and a lot of social listening, and there's somebody on my team that's part of her job every day to go through a lot of disinformation and misinformation that are mostly comments under our vaccine posts, because we do promote an awful lot of vaccines, and we spend a lot of time reporting this to the social networks. Like we have a certain job, it's to put out the factual information in relation to it, but then the social networks have a role themselves. Like it's up to them whether it's removed or not from the platform, but we still see it as a really important part of our role reporting, attempting to at least take this information down from the sites.
So we got together in January, a room full of comms professionals like me working in public sector. We had a discussion around trolling and negativity, and the feeling in that room that day was that the negativity is definitely increasing. and the extent to which people are using abusive and threatening language is definitely deepening. Is that your experience and your team's experience within HSC Social?
Very much so. Like, the comments have always been, we'll say, colourful on our social networks, but we're seeing a lot of it. And like, I don't want to constantly be going on about X or Twitter or that, but we do see a lot of that on that channel. And we've had multiple conversations whether it's time to come off that channel or should we be going elsewhere. But I actually, and I don't know if this is everybody's opinion, but I actually think it's more important that we're on that channel more than ever, because if there, who is there? And we need to be pushing the factual information out to that audience. And we're very lucky during the pandemic, all our social networks grew in audience. We had a big jump, and that channel, like, it's still a very, very important channel for us. And it's a customer service tool for people to come to us looking for information. So why would we leave that behind? But also, we need that information on that channel, like our fact-checked information, to be pushing to our audience. It's really important for us. So we feel that, like, we, I don't know if it's heightened or it's more, it's definitely, some of it is stronger, and, you know, an awful lot of accounts were removed during the pandemic, but they've all come back, and, you know, they feel they've almost won their battle and they're back stronger than ever. But like, often we do social listening, and so like, they might be loud and news, likes of news talk and that, who are
to just the more general public, because trusted information and are not there to, that, like, on average it can be 1% of your audience back from a social network because they are there, because that is the strategy: divide and conquer and silence. But you know, it's National Wellbeing Day this month, and this episode will go out around it. But I often think about the public sector pros, who are real people with real lives and real feelings, who are running those accounts. You're kind of anonymous to the general public, but how do you manage the wellbeing of your team in these scenarios?
But I suppose the team is the team. Like, we're like, I've just come off a team call for that, and I still think it's really, really important that we meet as often as possible. And, you know, like, there's a bit of a fun element to our team call, and that they know that they're there. Like, I think, I wouldn't say they're immune to it, but like, the people that they're really helping are the people in direct messages who are looking for services or looking for information about a topic, or look, and they come back and say, oh, thanks very much, that was very helpful. That's what they try and remember. Like, I know it is. And I suppose we've always had a bit of trolling in the HSC, not a massive amount. It's always been there. And like, you know, the health service does let people down. There's that, you know, and some things are hard to take, but that's not the fake news type of thing. You can almost turn that off. You can see it for what it is yourself, because we're working here for so long. But there's some really good stuff in that as well, like people who appreciate us for what we are doing.
That's a really good point. You know, leaning into the comments, doing your social listening and deciphering, well, what is trolling and deliberate disruption of the truth versus an unhappy service user who does not feel heard. So you're taking that back and bringing it back to what customer service or media and press teams.
And they're really good. Like, you have heard me say it so often, like, I have a really impressive team and who take their job so seriously and want to do a good job. So like, you know, like, we're all like, the one thing I have to say about the team is like, I hope they know that I'm there if they ever need me. But I know what it's like to be sitting reading it, and it's not as busy as it was during the pandemic, so it is quieter. So we've definitely had worse days, so I think that's probably a little help as well, that it's not as intense as it was back then.
So when it comes to deep fake, and the technology exists, it's low cost, it's easy to use, whereby people's voices and people's faces in video can be dubbed and can be copied, and essentially we can make anyone say anything, and it can look really real. We've seen a case of Joe Biden. We've seen it in presidential elections in Taiwan. Do you think, as a comms pro like me watching this, that it's only a matter of time before these deep fakes become are hitting screens in Ireland.
Very much so. Like, I think we saw it with the previous Taoiseach recently enough with a video call. It can happen. Like, I think we just have to keep an eye on it. There's nothing we can really do. I think some things are happening at the speed of light and this and that, but there's so many stories. Like, it's, and a lot of the time that is the stuff that really travels very, very, very fast. And I suppose we just have to be ready that we're going out going, this is what we are saying about a topic. And we're not short of experience on a crisis. So hopefully if something like that does happen, that we're ready for it.
Yeah, and the mainstream media are a really important kind of, you know, partner in that. You're both independent, of course, and it's their job to uphold, you know, what you're doing in the public interest. But mainstream media are also really important partners in truth and trust management, right?
Very much so. And like, you know, that the Journal have a really good combating misinformation section. They do that very well, and they would have done that quite well during the pandemic for the likes of the things that I mentioned earlier on about the army are coming in, and they'd have a myth busting section to, and did it quite fast. And I know it's a very small team that look after that, but it's quite impressive. And we have relationships, obviously, with, well, our press team have relationships with all the media that, you know, if we did have something like that, we needed to get out, the hopefully they would cover the story. And so like that as well, I'm going back to say that they're, you know, they're the trusted, they have the biggest reach in relation to social media as well for certain things. Like, you're not going to, like, somebody is always going to remember the deep fake, and they can't really do anything about that, but I suppose to try and damage limitation as best you could.
So what advice would you give to colleagues working in public sector and government in your role? Maybe they're new to it. Maybe they're coming in from the private sector into the public sector and they're going to get a bit of a jolt. Sometimes the public backlash can be huge. You've got massive experience and you have a cabinet. Marisa, talk to me about the government working group that you're part of currently.
Yeah, so there's an interagency government group that was set up recently enough to develop a disinformation national strategy. So that's ongoing at the minute. And we went out to public consultation a couple of months back and we're still going through responses to that. So the idea of it is that there's a government response to disinformation in relation to obviously that that'll cover the next couple of years. It's been a really interesting group that I've sat on. We've met monthly and there's various obviously other government agencies involved in that. And as part of that as well, I went to a misinformation conference over in Paris. It was actually interesting around the time of the bed bugs. That story was there. And a good part of that conference was that the bed bug story was not true to fact as well, that it was kind of like information that was spread like the bed bugs, but information spread through media. You know, like it grew worse than it ever was. So it was kind of an interesting part of that. But we're coming to a close in that, and hopefully the strategy will be published in the very soon.
And it's coming at a really interesting time because only recently we've had the new Digital Services Act pass through the European Parliament, and one of the aims is to give governments more roles in combating fake news and really forcing the social networks, as you said earlier, to take more responsibility. So I think a national strategy combined with new European laws hopefully will give legislators and governments more power. I know some citizens hate to hear that, but in actual fact, it's about protecting us all in the long run.
Indeed. And Commissioner Naman is part of this group as well. And they recently came out. They were looking for trusted flaggers there to join a group as well. So there's a lot of things happening about it. And because like people are seeing it as the most important thing to deal with. I think somebody said at the conference that they've been working in the French embassy. I can't remember exactly where she worked. And she said it's the most difficult thing that she's ever worked on. She's found in this the most challenging. So I think globally, we see this as a problem.
So what advice would you give to colleagues working in public sector and government in your role? Maybe they're new to it. Maybe they're coming in from the private sector into the public sector and they're going to get a bit of a jolt. Sometimes the public backlash can be huge. You've got massive experience and you have a calmness about you that I know you bring to the job because you've got so much experience. But what are your tips for them?
I think the best tip, and I think I use it all the time in our team, is this too shall pass. Like, some things feel horrific at the time of it, and I know it's very difficult, but a lot of the time you just have to get over the hump of it. And sometimes it's very hard to get on because you're the communications person responding to something and trying to get the right information, but like, it happens the best of us that we're not having the best time of it. But like, you just have to ride it out almost at the time, but also not to do anything drastic. And if you need advice, to think about it. Like, I wouldn't go deleting anything that you shouldn't delete, or go out with a response when you're not ready. That kind of thing it's very important in a crisis. Make sure you have your facts before you respond to anything, before you do anything drastic, because anything that goes out onto the internet lives on the internet, unfortunately. So just to bear that in mind.
Yeah, Marisa, thanks as always. I suspect, you know, maybe it might not be 4 years' time, but we'll be conversing again and looking back and maybe having another conversation around AI and how it's evolved, because it's really going to, it's not going to put us out of a job, but it's definitely going to change how we do our jobs, right?
But also, like I said at the beginning of it, it could be to our benefit. We could end up doing the most amazing creative because of new things that happen on the internet and get them turned around very, very quickly. And there's a lot of things that we shouldn't be afraid of if we can at all. I hope.
As always, a pleasure to talk to you and to get your insights. Marisa Ryan, Social Media and Digital Marketing Manager at the HSE. Thank you so much for joining.
The world of digital marketing and communications is changing at such a fast pace, as this episode has demonstrated. So if you really want to upskill and get your head around the new language of digital marketing, understand the trends, the technologies, and the tactics that are driving public engagement across digital channels, have a look at our accredited programs that are updated and now available to take online on any device and at a time that suits you. They are on demand. There's also another suite of short courses that are available on our website, publicsectormarketingpros.com. Also there you will find how you can work with me, whether it's from me speaking to your senior leadership, speaking at an event, writing strategy, training your team, or even becoming part off your team with our Done For You service. Have a look and come back to me if you've got any questions. Finally, as always, I just want to give my book a plug. It's my show. I should really plug my book. The second edition of Public Sector Marketing Pro, The Definitive Guide to Digital Marketing and Social Media for Government and Public Sector, is available on Amazon and all good online bookstores. And the book is also available in audiobook format on Audible. So that's a wrap for episode 98. I will see you on the next show.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share with a public sector pro you know. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform or on YouTube. For more free resources, details of our upcoming training courses and consulting options, log on to publicsectormarketingpros.com.